Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, the 28th chapter, the 21st shloka. The name of the chapter is Puranjana becomes a woman in his next life, or in the next life. Text 21. Katang nu doraka dina dorakir vaparayana vartishyante mai gate bina nava ivo dadhau katangnu darakadina darakir vaparayana vartishyante maikate binanava ivo dadau katangnu darakadina darakir vaparayana vartishyante maikate binanava ivo dadau katang nu darakadina darakar vaparayana vartishyante maikate binanava ivo dadau. Vaishnavas? Dharakiravaparayana Tatishtante Maigate Inanava Iva Dada Katamnu Dharakadina Dharakiravaparayana Adishtante Maikate Dina Nava Iva Dado Katangnu Darakadina Daragirva Parayana Tatishante Maikate Dina Nava Iva Dado Katangnu Darakadina Darakirva Parayana Minanava Ivo Dadao Katangnu Darakadina Satam Yudakabina Narakirva Parayana Adishante Naikate Binanava Ivodada Vaishnavis. Katang nu darakadina Tatam Nudarakadina Varakirva Parayana Vartishyante Maikate Minanava Evodada Katam Nudarakadina Varakirva Parayana Vartishyante Maikate Vinanava Ivodadao Katam. How? Nu. Indeed. Daraka. Sons. Dina. Poor. Daraki. Daughters. Va. Or. Aparayana. Having no one else to depend on. Vartishyante will live. Mayi, when I. Gate, gone from this world. Vina, broken. Nava, boat. Eva, like. Udadhao, in the ocean. Translation. King Paranjana continued worrying. After I pass from this world, how will my sons and daughters, who are now fully dependent on me, live and continue their lives? Their position will be similar to that of passengers aboard a ship wrecked in the midst of the ocean. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. At the time of death, every living entity worries about what will happen to his wife and children. Similarly, a politician also worries about what will happen to his country or his political party. Unless one is fully Krishna conscious, he has to accept a body in the next life according to his particular state of consciousness. Since Paranjana is thinking of his wife and children and is overly engrossed in thoughts of his wife, he will accept the body of a woman. Similarly, a politician or so-called nationalist who is inordinately attached to the land of his birth will certainly be reborn in the same land after ending his political career. One's next life will also be affected by the acts one performs during this life. Sometimes politicians act most sinfully for their own sense gratification. It is not unusual for a politician to kill the opposing party. Even though a politician may be allowed to take birth in his so-called homeland, he still has to undergo suffering due to his sinful activities in his previous life. This science of transmigration is completely unknown to modern scientists. So-called scientists do not like to bother with these things, because if they would at all consider this subtle subject matter and the problems of life, they would see that their future is very dark. Thus, they try to avoid considering the future and continue committing all kinds of sinful activities in the name of social, political, and national necessity. Om magna tamirandasya ganangana shalakaya chakshur unmilatangena tasmai shri guruve namaha mukam karati vachalam pangam mangayate girim yatkrap tripa tam aham vande shri guru dhivitanam So in reading these verses and hearing these verses, many things come to mind. And myself as a teacher, first thing that comes to mind is that this is a lesson. It's a crafted lesson, a lesson crafted by Narada Muni to assist King Pachinibhari in understanding the real goal of human life. Srila Prabhupada did a similar thing, and continues to do similar things, and encouraged us also to do similar things, to try to craft lessons that will impress upon ourselves and also people in general so that they can understand the goal of the human form of life. Paranjana actually is a non-existent person. We might say he's every man. When I was a new devotee, we used to do this play. Actually, when I was at the University of Buffalo in 1969. This play was performed called Every Man, where one person is depicted as the jiva, the soul. And he takes birth, and Maya keeps offering him one thing after another, one thing after another, one thing after another. And he goes for it, each thing, right? First, let me get an education, then let me get, you know, on the sports team and become very, very good, and then let me get a wife, and then let me have children, and then let me become rich, and then let me get a big house, and then, you know, there was some intoxication offered at some point, and then ultimately death. And in between each experience, which started out with great hopes of potential enjoyment and ended in great disappointment, our every man, he would sing, "I want to enjoy." And he would sing that, and then Maya would come. That was her cue. She would appear. I played Maya. I still play Maya. So so this is the nature of the material world. And only somebody who sees that material world in proper perspective has the ability to break that cycle of constantly singing that song, "I want to enjoy," and then getting some enticing dog biscuit from Maya Devi, and then going for it, only to find out it's just a dog biscuit. It doesn't taste very good after the first crunch. So how do we do that? Because that's our responsibility. Prabhupada took the responsibility on his shoulders to come to the West and try to figure out how to take the degraded masses yearning to breathe free from a point of degradation that was beyond his ability to really comprehend. We were in San Francisco. Srila Prabhupada was on Vyasasana, and somebody was fanning him. And because they were fanning him, they were kind of close to him. During the kirtan, some people who were obviously not in their right mind were dancing around in bizarre ways. And Prabhupada, under his breath, he said, "Just see how degraded they have become." So who could conceive how degraded they have become, or we have become, or we are, depending on where we fall on the spectrum. But Prabhupada saw that, and he could have said, "Forget about it. I'm just going to go back to my little house, Radhadamodar, surrounded by the samadhis of Rupa Goswami and so many other great souls, take darshan of the Lord, and prepare myself to go back to Godhead." Prabhupada could have done that. But he chose a different path. And instead he got on the Jaladuta, on the order of his spiritual master, and he came to Boston Harbor, to New York Harbor, to Boston Harbor, to America. And he began to try to cut through, right? He tried to cut through the illusion of material existence and force-feed us spiritual life. But you know, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. So Srila Prabhupada coded that otherwise perhaps uncomfortable message in ways that we could appreciate. Sunday love feast, right? Samosas, halava, yes, yes, come, take prasadam, chant and be happy, right? Once we gave Srila Prabhupada in New York, we handed one devotee, Patit Udaran, he handed Srila Prabhupada a little white sweet ball, and Prabhupada popped it in his mouth and said, "Simply wonderful." And then someone in the audience said, "Well, Srila Prabhupada, we give these out on the train. What will happen to the people who eat them?" Prabhupada said, "They will become simply wonderful." So this was Srila Prabhupada's mission, and here it's also Narada Muni's mission, that he has a very difficult client. Here he has a very wealthy king. You can imagine he's very well positioned. He has many wives, and they're all very surrendered and very beautiful and very cooperative and very chaste and la, 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 yada, 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 whatever. And he has lots of money, and he has power, and he has strength, and he has fame, and he has a big false ego, and Narada is his spiritual master. He has to somehow or other spoon-feed him this transcendental knowledge. You know, you're not that body. And all these things that you've accumulated as signs of success will actually be the result of your downfall. This was Narada's mission. It's not a unique thing, right? Chitraketu, Hayat Angira had a similar responsibility with Chitraketu, and he crafted for him also a very unique, very elaborate learning experience, experiential learning. He gave him a taste of what was the future. Narada Muni did it also with Megrari the hunter. Okay, so you think you're going to just go around killing, half-killing these animals, and it's all going to be just fine? Well, let me give you previews of the coming attractions. So you can see that it's not exactly what you think it's going to be. It's going to be something else. So Srila Prabhupada also crafted a learning experience for us, unique, special learning experience for us. And we're still in it. We're still going through the process that Prabhupada gave us, beautiful deities, beautiful temple room, in the heart of the of various cities all over the world, where everywhere you lay your eyes, right, in your face, all over the place, there are billboards telling you how to be happy, right? Drink Coke and you'll be happy. Smoke this and you'll be happy. Hang out with this male or female and you'll be happy. Get a body that looks like this and you'll be happy. And everywhere we look, we see these messages. Take advantage of the material world and you'll be happy. And Srila Prabhupada has to tell us it's all a lie. Every word of it is a lie. And unless we are completely convinced and believe him unconditionally, we're destined to take birth again in this material world. Such a sad thing. When you think about it, how many births have we taken already, right? How much time has passed from the time that we had that initial error of deciding that we wanted to be independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and found ourselves planted within the material world? And how many births, how many deaths? And finally, we come in contact by the mercy of the spiritual master, or by the mercy of Krishna, we get Guru. By the mercy of Guru, we get Krishna. So by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, by Krishna's mercy, we've come in contact finally with pure devotional service. We get the opportunity to come each day in front of Rukmini Dwarkadish. We pray to Tulsi Devi, please give me the privilege of devotional service. And yet, somehow or other, we can't quite really believe it. We can't quite really accept it. So, at least for me, I know behind the front activity, the facade of devotional sadhana bhakti, vaidhi sadhana bhakti, there runs this constant script in my mind. How can I enjoy? How can I enjoy? How can I enjoy? How can I enjoy? How can I get a more comfortable bed? Is this mattress hard enough? Can I get high Wi-Fi? Where's the high-speed internet? I need a new 160 gig iPod so that I can, you know, keep track of all my devotional stuff. So we're constantly looking, and if we're thinking about marriage, this is what is happening here. If the thought happens to come to my mind, I'm thinking, well, let me get the perfect mate, male or female, doesn't matter. Let it be beautiful, and if it's rich, that's a good thing. And let it be able to take care of me in a way that I become very comfortable and happy. And best that they think I'm the center of the universe. Right? They should consider that there's no one who's going to make them happier and feel better than I am. So they should be absorbed in me. And if it's a man, he's thinking, let her know how to cook. And if it's a woman, she's thinking, let him know how to cook. And we're all considering how it is that this person will make my life more perfect than it is. Because there's something missing in my life, after all. I'm unhappy somehow or other. And I have to fill this space. So let me look for some kind of pleasure. Let me look for somebody to plug that hole and make me feel better. And so we search. And we try to find it in so many things, so many objects, bodies and electronic gadgets and many different things. We try to find the source, the thing that will plug that hole that drains our sense of satisfaction, that drains our sense of happiness. And yet Prabhupada is telling us again and again, it doesn't exist in the material world. There's nothing in the material world that's going to stop that inherent feeling of dissatisfaction, that gnawing realization that there is no happiness in the material world. And so, to some extent, we know more than those people out there. We know because Prabhupada has told us, because it's in these books, because Narada Muni is crafting this King Paranjana story. We know. We know what the goal of human life is. We know what we have to do. And not only do we know what we have to do, but we know that the rest of the world is only going to get worse and worse and worse and spiral down and down and down into repeated birth and death. And we know that we have the information to stop it. Within our hands, within these books, we have the power to change the course of history. We have the ability to take some living entity, some jiva soul, out of the ocean of repeated birth and death and put them on the path back to self-realization. That's our responsibility. Prabhupada has given it to us. It's not a light thing. It is a heavy weight that we carry. So we can do it in nice ways, just like here we have Narada Muni. He's trying to do it in nice ways. And so we also have to craft, constantly consider how it is that we can push this information forward, this knowledge forward. I was listening to one video, you know, where they have many of my godbrothers and godsisters there telling stories about their experiences with Srila Prabhupada. And one man was saying how he was with Srila Prabhupada in India, and he was telling Srila Prabhupada that he really wanted to increase his hearing and chanting. So the idea he had was that he would go somewhere, some remote place in India, in the Himalayas perhaps, or some ashram, and he would just hear and chant. We hear that, right? I'm just gonna hear and chant, just really get into it. And when he told that to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, please don't do that. He said, I already spent too much time in Vrindavan. I could have done so much more if I would have come here sooner. So that's a pretty heavy statement. Srila Prabhupada was in the most holy place in the world, and in the most holy place in the world, he was in the most holy place in the world, because he was at Radha Damodar. And yet he was saying, no, I already spent too much time in Vrindavan. I could have done so much more if I had come here earlier. So here we are, and we have to take that responsibility. It's our mission. Prabhupada says in many places, this is our mission. However, if we do this mission properly with our goal in mind, to go back to Godhead ourselves and take as many people with us as possible, then we're fine. Then the material world, Hare Krishna, then the material world won't touch us. It won't hurt us. We're protected. But I was here in L.A., not in this temple room, actually, in the other temple room, which is, I guess, now the Fate exhibit. Yeah. So we were in there, and Prabhupada came in one day, and we had made a conch club wheel and lotus out of sequins and velvet, and they were up above the deities. Prabhupada sat in the Vyasasana. He took darshan, and he sat in the Vyasasana, and he said, who has made these? And there we stood up, some ladies that had sewn, and he said, thank you very much. And then all of a sudden he said, is there anyone not chanting their 16 rounds? So everybody looked at each other, left to right. No one said anything. And then Srila Prabhupada said, is anyone not chanting their 16 rounds? He said, is anyone fibbing or lying, speaking, not speaking? So then a few hands here and there went up. Well, maybe I'm not every day, little. Everyone looking left and right. And then Prabhupada said, you must chant 16 rounds. He said, somehow or other, you have to understand that you do not have to go looking for Maya. Maya is on the other side of Krishna. If you forget Krishna, immediately Maya is there. So there was a door next to Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasana with a hallway, and somebody was sitting on a ladder and he was painting in the hallway. So he had his hand up. And he said, well, Srila Prabhupada, I'm working very hard to make Krishna's temple beautiful. He said, sometimes I only sleep 4 hours a day. And before he could practically get that last syllable out of his mouth, Prabhupada said, then sleep 2 hours. He said, it is not so difficult. It only takes 2 hours, 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the evening. But somehow or other, you must chant 16 rounds. So Prabhupada gave us the nectar of prasadam, halava, samosas. He gave us the nectar of deity worship. We all enjoy a good kirtan. Japa is a little bit of a stretch sometimes, difficult. It's maybe a little bit more difficult to hear the holy name, to really get into our japa day after day, 16 rounds minimum, every day. It's a little difficult. But this is the process that Prabhupada gave us. And if we want to go back to Godhead, we have to practice that process carefully, seriously. We have to understand that we can't skirt it. We can't get around. There's no shortcuts. Prabhupada said, then just sleep 2 hours. So we can't. There's no excuses. Well, I'm painting, I'm cleaning, I'm cooking, I'm doing so much service. But Prabhupada gave us our number one service, our vow, to please chant 16 rounds. So we have to follow that vow. And this is the process, or these are the processes that Srila Prabhupada has given us. And if we practice them, we become enlightened and enlivened. And in that state of enlivenment, we can change the hearts of others. We can have lines and we can have so many things. But if we're not convinced, if we're not enlivened, then people see us just the same old, you know, nervous wrecks that they see everywhere else. If they want to see something else. They want to see somebody who's grounded in a reality which is beyond the reality that they are thinking that they're seeing, experiencing every day. So we have to emanate transcendence. That's what Srila Prabhupada did. He emanated transcendence. When you came in contact with Srila Prabhupada, there was no question, this is a Vaikuntha man, even if you didn't know what Vaikuntha was. You just knew that this person was from a different place. He wasn't the same old, same old. He was a spiritually enlivened person. And people, as he said, when he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, I just met a very nice, saintly person. So people have to walk away from each of us thinking that I just met a very nice saintly person, which would really help if we became very nice saintly people. So if we, there's a joke I read where one person is in a car and they're driving in this car, but they're in a very, very bad mood. So they're cursing and screaming and yelling and, you know, in the underbreath, you know, every time somebody cuts them off or the light changes, they're like saying different things, making gestures. And then finally they're in back of one person, and that one person passes through a yellow light, sees the light turning yellow and decides to stop. So that's like, forget it. So the person is screaming and giving all kinds of obscene poses, and then they look up in the mirror and they see behind them the flashing lights of police. So police come, knock on the window, please get out of the car, come with us. They put him in the car and they take him to the police station, put him in the cell for a couple of hours, and then finally take him out and say, okay, you can go. So the person says, what do you mean I can go? Why did you even arrest me? I didn't even do anything. All I was doing was waiting at the light. And they said, well, you know, we saw on your car there were these stickers that said, God is my co-pilot, Jesus saves, and so many different spiritual things. And we saw the way you were behaving. We thought maybe it was a stolen car. So this is the thing, is that we wear our spirituality on our kurta or our choli, you know. We wear it by the ornaments of a sadhu. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, equanimity. So many different qualities that we're supposed to be wearing. We're supposed to be decorated with them. And when we're decorated with them, then people will notice and they will take up the process of Krishna consciousness, or at least be become inquisitive to know what is it that makes this person different than other people. That was Prabhupada's effulgence. That was his qualification, and he expected it to be our qualification. So that's one point here, is the idea that Srila Prabhupada is doing for us what Narada Muni is doing for King Pratinibhari. And he's telling us the story within a story within a story, that we're supposed to understand that it applies to us, and we're supposed to apply it to our lives. And when we apply it to our lives, we move forward and we make spiritual advancement. Another thing that I considered when I was looking at these verses, which was quite interesting, is I was thinking, this is a, what is it called? A conundrum? Yeah, whatever. It's one of those. And because Very often as a female in this Hare Krishna movement, I hear, maybe my god sisters over here, other devotees can say, that we hear very often women are supposed to be chaste, they're supposed to be submissive, they're supposed to take care of their husbands, they're supposed to ornament themselves when their husbands are around. I was in a room with Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur, and Srila Prabhupada was speaking about how in the Vedic culture, a woman could always, not only women, but all people could be seen, you could just look at them and you could tell what ashram they were in. Right? So he said, you can tell sannyasi because he wears his cloth in one way, and he wears saffron. Brahmachari, he's wearing saffron, wearing his cloth in a different way. Married woman is wearing sindoor in her hair, and unmarried woman is not wearing. So in Vedic culture, and then he said, but in our society, everybody dresses simply. So then someone raised their hand in the room, one of my god sisters, and said, but Srila Prabhupada, what if your husband buys you beautiful silk saris? Are you not supposed to wear them? Srila Prabhupada said, you should wear them when your husband is there. Otherwise, who are you trying to attract? He said, Krishna is not attracted by opulent saris. And then she made a face. And Prabhupada said to the person sitting next to him, was Pushta Krishna Maharaj, what's the problem? And she said, well, Prabhupada, they call us mother, but they don't treat us like mother. You know, they don't treat us nicely. So then Pushta Krishna Maharaj said, well, I think it's because when they think that when in the verses, in the prayers, it says, whenever I think of sex life, I spit on the idea. Well, they think that means whenever I think of women, I spit on them. So Prabhupada closed his eyes for a few seconds, and then he said, first let them become free from sex desire, then let them spit. So we hear in classes, we read in the Bhagavatam in many places the duties of a woman, but from reading this here, it makes me consider that maybe we shouldn't do those things. Because if we do those things, if we carry out our duties nicely, then our husbands will become attached to us. And then, like Paranjana, they'll be forced to take birth again in the material world. And that's not a good thing. So it puts us in a kind of an awkward situation. Do we or don't we? So how do we get around this apparent difficulty that here we're given and very often told what we're supposed to do to be the ideal husband, right? We take very nice care of our wives. We give her bangles and babies and beautiful cloth. And if we're a good wife, we're supposed to keep the house very nice and make wonderful prasadam so our husbands become fat and waddly and completely contented, right? They should come home and the house should be like Vaikuntha, the fragrances of incense and, you know, beautiful. It should be very nicely decorated. Everything should be very pleasant. And then each one becomes attached to the other. And what happens? We take birth again in the material world. So we switch places, right? I become a guy and he becomes a woman and we start all over again. I was just actually with, maybe you know them, Krishna Priya and Naveen, who live in Irvine. She was my student, and he was saying to her that, in my presence, that he has a theory that they were husband and wife in reverse order in previous life, and now they switched. And he said, but I did better than you because now I'm a man and you're a woman. And she said, well, let's see what happens next lifetime. It's not over yet. So how do we break this cycle? Because we don't really want to go that route. You know, many people say, well, if you do it, then you become a man in your next life. Well, wow, just what I always wanted. So from Srila Prabhupada, we understand, I don't want to be a man, you don't want to be a woman. So what are we going to do about that? How are we going to go back to the spiritual world? And so all these duties that we have, just like Arjuna, he had his duties to perform. But Krishna told him, that it's not, you just do your duty, but think of me, right? Think of me and fight. That was Krishna's instruction. So Prabhupada's instruction to us is preach, practice Krishna consciousness, and then varnashram. Then do what you have to do. So keep the society together, function in an organized and mannerly way, behave as you are supposed to. But the first instruction, the first business at hand is to practice Krishna consciousness, to keep Krishna consciousness in the center, to keep Krishna in the center. Because if we don't do that, we run the risk of taking birth again and again in the material world. That can be quite problematic. And none of us want to do that. So therefore, it behooves us to take this responsibility very seriously. But on the other hand, we look at ourselves and we like it, right? We like it when someone thinks that we're the center of the universe. We really like it when someone talks about us, when their consciousness is fixed upon us, when we come home and someone presents us with a wonderful plate of food and they do our laundry and so many things. So we like that. It feels good to us. But that very feeling, that very liking is what will keep us in the material world. So therefore we have to be very cautious that although we keep a carefully orchestrated and very peaceful material life, we don't forget to keep Krishna in the center. And this was Srila Prabhupada's request to us, that our mission is to continuously tell others about Krishna, to continuously practice the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, to keep Krishna. Prabhupada gives that in that purport in the Bhagavad Gita, where he elaborately describes that a husband and wife can sit down together morning and evening and they can chant Hare Krishna and they can, you know, worship the deity together and so many things. So in this way, we can circumvent this cycle of repeated birth and death. We can break out of the cycle of male-female switching. I become a husband, you become a wife, and we go on like that, back and forth, back and forth. This is the system that Prabhupada has given us. And so we have the gradual process. We can go up step by step by step, birth after birth, making gradual advancement. Or we can take the Prabhupada elevator, go right to the top. Because from the very beginning, Prabhupada takes us right to the top, to prema bhakti. From the very beginning, practically you listen to classes in 1966, you'll hear Prabhupada talking about the goal of human life being to serve Krishna, to fix our mind on Krishna somehow or other, to realize that we're not this body. From the very beginning, he's telling us what is the goal of human life. So being Prabhupada Anugas, Rupa Anugas, we have the responsibility of using everything in Krishna's service and practicing a peaceful, well-organized society. But at the same time, we have to see things properly, in proper perspective, and keep Krishna in the center. This is the message that the allegory of King Paranjana is trying to get across to Pachinibar. And this is just the middle. It goes on and on and on. And we'll see, you know, he switches. He takes birth as a woman, and then he gets attached to his husband, and here we go again. So to avoid that, we have the process. We have the perfect instruction manual in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. We have the perfect teacher, Srila Prabhupada, and many of my godbrothers and godsisters who have many of you who have taken the process seriously and therefore are becoming qualified to help others achieve spiritual success. That's our responsibility. And I'll end there, and if there's any questions, I'll try to answer. Archituppa, you're already getting ready. You got the microphone in your hand.
That's right. Haribol, thank you for a very finely crafted, instructive class. Thank you very much. You rightfully stressed on the chanting, japa, responsibility for doing that. And I'm going to throw a question at you that I get a lot, that young devotees ask, that we see, especially when they're becoming a little discouraged, we see that so many of you guys, the Prabhupada disciples, you've been chanting Hare Krishna for 30 plus years, and you're not nice people. You're not nice. You're not even nice. So how can I, you know, well, where's my encouragement that I should go on chanting? What, you know, does this really work if you guys are chanting for 30 plus years and you're not even nice people, not even as nice as somebody that I work with or, you know, somebody I meet in a supermarket? So where's my encouragement for chanting, you know, seriously?
There's a couple of answers to that. One is that, first of all, the people you meet in the grocery store, or even the person who's your, your CEO or whatever, or your boss, your immediate, you don't live with that person. So be careful. Because you ask his wife whether he's a nice guy, or his second wife, or maybe his third wife, or, you know. So when we're family here, and anyone who has siblings knows that the person you get along with least sometimes is your sibling. You know, you fight when you're fight over toys, and you fight over the attention of your parents, and you fight over different things, who turns the channel on the television set, so many different things. But ultimately, there's a great bond of affection there. And we take privilege with each other with family in, you know, telling them things that people wouldn't ordinarily tell them, you know, like, so come in and you say, how do I look? And you go, horrible. And so, but not very many people would dare say that. But you as family, you can say that. So we have that sense of family because we're together all the time. We live all the time together. We tend to see things in each other that agitate us or disturb us. We know that so-and-so snores, and we know that so-and-so doesn't really take a cold shower when they get up in the morning because the mirrors are always steamed when I walk in. And we know these things about each other, so we kind of hold each other at ransom. So that's one point. The other point is that, you know, we're all in the shower. And so, so what's 40 years? Right? 40 years. Maybe 40 years when you're coming from the womb of an exalted person who's been practicing spiritual life. And that, by the way, we'll check out those second generation people in 40 years and see how advanced they are. Because now, you know, they're going to go through those experiences that we went through, and let's see how they come out, if they're chanting, etc. But at the same time, we were coming from below zero, really. We were coming from below zero. So now we're on the scale, you know, and we're moving up towards pure devotional service, which is somewhere over there, and we're following Srila Prabhupada's instructions. So therefore, in Krishna's eyes, we are engaged in pure devotional service because on the order of Srila Prabhupada, we are doing things. But the open heart surgery that we have to undergo is a process that takes time. And we have to be patient with each other. And 40 years is a drop in the bucket because 400 million lifetimes we've been doing something else. So that's another thing. And then still another thing is that we should become nice. Right? Why shouldn't we become nice? If we see that we're not nice, then we should do something about that. Of course, we have to define what nice is. And nice doesn't always mean that, you know, if you tell me that you're drinking, I say, oh, well, that's good. I prefer not to do that. But if you want to drink, sure, why not? Sit down. What do you want? You know, that's not necessarily nice, although sometimes we consider niceness that way. But still, we should be nice. We should try to present the truth, but in a way that's palatable. And we should try to develop the qualities of a sadhu, which are nice, you know. Cutting sometimes, but nice. Is that okay? Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Somebody over here. Oh, it's Aniruddha. He's incognito. He has his hood on. I didn't recognize him.
Not quite sure how to put this, but it seems that this kind of a story can encourage a premature form of renunciation, which is quite harsh, mm-hmm. and which has actually been quite a problem for us within ISKCON, where in abuse of women and neglect of children can be an unfortunate result or consequence. But I was thinking that, you know, especially the men and women who become partners or married within ISKCON have to be nice to each other.
Why?
In order to, you know, be civilized people. And as Prabhu was saying, you know, you've got to be nice devotees to be mm-hmm. attractive to others. What to speak of each other. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to then be totally entangled. I was just thinking yesterday of Prishni and Sutapa, who took birth more than once together to serve as Krishna's parents. And it just occurred to me that, you know, you can have a partnership and be pure devotees at the same time, mm-hmm. Following that example. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's necessarily what we'll all do, but certainly that is an inspiration in one sense, and that taking, you know, sannyas or whatever is sort of like a, if a devotee is, if we're pure devotees, then that's sort of like a security for us that we're not going to be in close proximity to those that we love, because we should have affection for our friends because they're devotees, even if they happen to be, or regardless of what body they happen to have, male or female. We should be friendly to each other because we're devotees. And according to the nectar of devotion, you know, if somebody's connected to Krishna, then that's, you know, that's pure, not contaminated. So it just occurred to me that, but then, you know, taking sannyas or vanaprastha and then removing ourselves from that situation is like a security for us. So that if there is some attachment, then it's not going to be a, it's going to be less of a problem. Anyway, I just thought what you might,
is there a
what
question
your comments might, no, what your comments might be on that.
It's very true that these passages, as well as others of similar nature, throughout Prabhupada's books have been used to create an atmosphere of an unhealthy atmosphere of artificial renunciation. And in order to prevent doing that, we see, I think part of it is based on our Western upbringing, because in the West, Srila Prabhupada gave the example of when he went to Dainippon in Japan, and he spoke to one Japanese businessman who was helping him get the books together, and he said, "What is your goal?" And the man took his business card from the bottom of the stack and put it at the top of the stack. And that was his statement about where, you know, what the goal of my life is, to be the top. And so when we heard, even from the very beginning, that, you know, sannyasis are the top and men are the top and Brahmins are the top, then immediately the aspiration became to be a sannyasi man Brahmin, you know, because everyone wants to be at the top. Second really won't do. I was watching once by default. It was a funny thing. I was at my son's house and he had the television. You know how people just kind of have the television on and it's just there. No one's watching it. It's just kind of like making noise. And so what had happened, it was the end of some soccer match, I think. And somebody was there just taking pictures. And it was over. So people were just kind of walking around and, you know, hugging each other and crying and this and that. And someone was just kind of taking pictures. And so it was like wandering around in this stadium. And I think it was the French and the Italians. And the Italians had won and the French had come in second. So they had a line up at one point. Someone was giving out medals, gold medals and silver medals or whatever the colors, I don't know, whatever, the first and second medals. So the French were very angry because they had lost. And here on camera, you were seeing these guys, right, taking the medal and shoving it in their pocket. One guy threw it on the floor and he was stepping on it. And I don't think he obviously didn't realize he was being filmed, national television. But being second just isn't good enough. You know what I mean? You want to be first. So therefore, when you hear renunciation is the highest and being a sannyasi is the highest and being Brahmin is the highest, we naturally want to be like that. And in the beginning, especially, I think, we kind of thought we could become advanced in a few weeks or at least a few years. That's why I say 40 years, what's 40 years? 40 years is nothing. So we tend to, you know, want to go to the head of the class faster than we can. But if we really check in, or even worse, allow somebody else to do a little open heart surgery and see where we really are, then we realize that some of these things are essential in our spiritual journey. They're not just, you know, concessions so that we can get in Maya on the way, and it's not such a hard process. But they're actually needed for our spiritual journey. There are certain things we have to remove, some anarthas we have to take out of the heart. And this is the process for removing them. So as long as we realistically and honestly examine where we are and enter into whatever ashram we enter into with a sincere and honest self-assessment, we stand much greater chance of coming out the other end alive and well in spiritual life. And that assessment is not something we do once when we, you know, just before we decide to change colors or whatever, but it's something we do regularly throughout our spiritual life. And we try to see where we are, where we want to go, and what our impediments are on the path. And then we take advice from Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu and calculate our course regularly so that these anartas become eliminated from the heart. And as a society, we have to preach that. We have to respect that every single member of the society on every single level is allowed to do what they have to do in order to remove the anartas from their heart. Because what gets said, from the pulpit filters down, and then people, they don't feel good about, you know, being a grihastha or being a woman or being a whatever they are, then it only results in resentment, and it also results in the positive effect of going through that process not really taking place. It's like I had many times in my ashram girls who were young and they needed to wear glasses. But wearing glasses wasn't very cool because it made you look not beautiful. And so very often I'd have girls who would get glasses and they would accidentally drop them behind the car when the car was backing up, or they would regularly lose them. And why would they lose them? They cost $100. But they would lose them because they didn't want to wear them. And it was more practical to be blind than it was to look ugly. Because appearance is such a valued commodity within society. People don't preach about how good it is to see until you get old and you start becoming blind. People only preach to young girls about how beautiful they're supposed to be, how sexy they're supposed to be, how important their appearance is. So that's what they considered being primary. The fact that I can't read a book, well, that's, what the heck, I have to be able to be beautiful. So therefore, they would literally voluntarily, walk around into walls until they got mature enough to understand that there was a higher principle. So that's what we're like in our own spiritual practice, is that sometimes we encourage people to act like fools because we don't give them permission to understand that there's a higher purpose and that the real goal of human life requires a process. It's not just something you decide one day and you just act prematurely and it happens to you. So we, as those of persons who find themselves in leadership roles, who give information to others, have to be very careful that they use their intelligence when preaching. And this is what Narada Muni is doing here. This is how I started the class in the first place, is that Narada Muni is being very careful how he instructs Pachinibhari. He didn't just come out and say, hey, listen, buddy, get it together, you're an idiot. You got this wife, you're just going to take birth as a woman, and, it's a deep, dark well of household life, get out of here. He didn't say that. He takes, chapters to tell this very elaborate story to King Pachinibhari, hoping that he'll get it. Angira Muni, he crafted a very elaborate system to get Chitraketu to realize that having a son wasn't the ultimate goal of human life. So this is our job as a preacher, and it's very much in our hands that if we don't transmit the philosophy properly, people will receive it wrongly. When Prabhupada spoke these words in the Bhagavatam, his actions and his behavior with his women disciples and the devotees in general made us very comfortable in feeling that we were welcome and needed within the society. But when they're handled in the hands of less experienced surgeons, they often kill people. I think I'm supposed to end because you're supposed to chant the Sarira Vijayajal prayer. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.